never stop chasing your dreams.
And never say never.
There you are.
Hi.
Hello. We're just waiting for JD. She's been having some email problems, but I think we might have fixed them yesterday.
So you're obviously in Florida.
I am.
How are things?
Good. Good. Staying at this is my mother's house. And there's JD. Let's see. Here she comes. She'll be all stressed. I feel
so. Need to be stressed.
I don't understand. I'm like, I do this from London. We never have a problem. I'm here.
Look at that. I love it.
You did it. You did it.
I did it. Hi, Jill.
How are you?
Finally.
Yes.
Thanks. You look fabulous, darling.
So do you. So do you. I mean, you know. I mean, I love your setup. That's like, it's.
Thank you.
So rock and roll.
Earrings, the whole thing.
Hey, I'm so glad I popped on.
Yes.
I'm so glad you were able to.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I'm scared of doing this shit by myself, man.
Oh, I miss you. It's so far.
Awesome. So we were just catching up on all our personal stuff, so it worked out well.
Good.
I have to say, when I logged on yesterday and I saw that you guys were finally able to update your socials with this news that not only is this movie done, but accepted at Cannes is...
Wow.
I mean, what was your thought? Like, tell me your reaction when you guys found out.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, to clarify so that we're not misrepresenting... There, a few years back, the festival, obviously, the only films that can be accepted at the festival are films that have theatrical releases. And that is not very many films. I mean, the majority of films are indie films that will never see a theatrical release for many reasons, budget, no stars, blah, blah. So they started this program called Go to Cannes. And that is where they took seven basically regional festivals, and it's almost like there's like an Asian market, a Swiss market, like large markets, and there's a queer market, and they picked a festival that's like one of the biggest festivals in that particular market or genre, and they said curate five films to bring to this market. And so each of these markets, as they call them, pick five films to bring to market. And we were one of five in the queer market to be chosen. The only American film, I believe we might be the only American film in the entire 35 films that were chosen. I don't know that for sure, but I think there's not that many of us. And then I'm also fairly certain we're the lowest budget of all of them. So that's also a feather in our cap, because that's my entire career has been that way. All of that to say, my wife, Lauren, who stars in it, who edited, who is the technical director, and who has been basically glued to her fucking desk for the last 2 years working on this project, you know, you don't know how something's going to be received. You do all this work. We've done all this work, all of us, for no pay. And we have invested hundreds, if not thousands, of hours into it. And to have that kind of that level of validation, Lauren, how it happened was, I was in bed. It was like 11:30 at night. Lauren runs upstairs. She's crying and smiling at the same time. So I knew it had to be something
good. It's good.
Something good, right? And she's like, she just shows me the phone, and I see, you know, the Palme d'Or Cannes girls, and I was like, okay, doesn't matter what happens from here on out, we can say that we did a project at $60,000 that was invited to present at this market. And this is the most prestigious film market in the world. Not many films are invited. There's many people bring their films. Like, there will be 4,000 films being shopped.
Right.
But only probably, you know, a few dozen are actually invited to present in the way that we are. So incredible opportunity. We're doing a live 3-minute pitch. It'll be me, the director, Bryn, and Lauren. Without having a fourth person, Katie, would be just a bit too much because it's normally done by one person. But we were like, we're all kind of actors, so we thought we could like bounce off of each other. And then we'll be showing 12 minutes of the film, 3 different clips. So not in succession, but sort of the beginning, middle, and end, to distributors, sales agents, and film festival programmers. So the idea is to open the door to opportunities to filmmakers who would not get this opportunity otherwise. The other 4 films in our cohort, we have a WhatsApp group. We are on fire. Like, we're so excited to meet each other, watch each other's pitches. Like, I'm inviting them to parties. Like, we all just want to meet and really help each other and elevate each other. Right. Like, the first thing we said was, hey guys, we're here to introduce you to everyone we know. And they're like, God, you guys are so American, you know, like, you are. That's how we were.
Yes. But to be 1 of 5, like, right? Is just, wow. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah. And,
like, I seriously, and you're going, like, you're going, you will be.
We will be there.
You'll be on TV.
I had hats made.
Oh, perfect.
I had postcards made of our, like, all of it. Like,
yes.
We're going to blanket this thing, you know. And the other thing is, I was like, guys, we have to embrace our budget level. I'm proud of it. Like, I'm like, any old jackass with $50 million can make a good movie. It takes talent to make a story with few resources.
Yes.
And a budget, yeah. Right? There's like, I mean, I think the true test of a filmmaker is, here's a camera, here are some actors, like, make a story that is cohesive. And there's a lot of filmmakers who couldn't do this. So I was like, let's be proud of our budget. Let's say this is the future. There is a future for filmmakers in this budget range, not 60,000, but 500,000. I want to clarify, I'm not doing this ever again. but all of that to say, I was like, I'm proud of this. And I have started to say, I'm not proud. I don't think this is a good film for 60,000. It's a good film, period. And to have this kind of validation, obviously thank you to Lisa Rose at Mardi Gras, the Sydney Mardi Gras Gay and Lesbian Film Festivals, for seeing and getting it and, you know, really understanding the story and what we were able to do. Like, you know, and we very much feel like people see this movie and they either really, really get it and love it, or it just doesn't resonate with them. And that's fine. I mean, not every movie is for everybody, and I'm okay with that.
I feel like it will. Like, it's very cutting edge. So many people, you know, between AI starting to come to the forefront of everybody's mind, NFTs was like a blip, and either people pounced on it, or, you know, they dove in, they researched it. But digital art is it's a big deal. And that theme running through it, as well as people who are sick of getting their work stolen, whether it's a crappy little meme or a painting or something, and it explodes because someone did
it without a song
without crediting someone. Yeah. So honestly, I can't see how this can fail with an audience in this climate that we're in right now. You know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, JD.
I'm sorry. Did I miss what the premise of the movie is? Did you guys talk about that already? Or
can you tell us? It's kind of a story of a toxic mentor. So my wife Lauren plays like an up and coming digital artist who, at the beginning of the film, it's established that she has connected with a very powerful art curator who basically has the ability to make or break people's careers with her social media following. It's also obvious that there's some sort of attraction between the women, though they've never met in person. And and Andrea, the villain, for lack of a better word, our antagonist, she doesn't know what Lex looks like. Lex who is Lauren's character's pseudonym, knows what Andrea looks like. So, but they have this flirtatious relationship. And you don't actually, what's interesting is the women don't even meet until the last third of the film, but that's another part of the story. So it's truly about a toxic mentorship situation where the mentor pushes Lex basically to the edge of sanity to get her to produce good work. Uh-huh. And that she realizes that the less that Lex is taking care of herself and pushing her, the better the art is. And then a situation occurs where the art curator basically appropriates her work and presents it as her own. And the art sells and makes a shit ton of money. And then there is the showdown when Lex comes to find her. And so there's a little bit of like how we frame the pitch is that it's almost a little Misery-ish in that it's like a two-hander where Lex's character basically hunts her down at her cabin retreat to have a little chat about how this whole thing went down. And then when you mix in the attraction, when you mix in the power differential, there's obviously racial overtones because this art curator is an older white woman who clearly has this habit of appropriating the work of women of color. So there's a lot of themes going on in this film. It's art. There's race. There's the technology aspect. We did use some AI in the film, which is interesting. I mean, I could talk for this onto this topic for hours, but it all sort of came to a head on Twitter when Justine Bateman basically accused us of like committing a hate crime for using any AI in our film. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, child star, a group of queer women of color. You're attacking my wife who had $60,000 to make a film and we committed a hate crime. Okay. Watch your words.
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever. You were never going to be able to bring her around, and that's fine. She ended up blocking Lauren.
Oh, Mallory.
And I have now been somehow weirdly connected to like two of the main characters on Family Ties, which was like my favorite show growing up. So that's the basic story. I mean, truly, it's like a toxic mentor story. Our cat is in it and she's fantastic.
I was going to ask you about that. Your cat has a cameo.
A cameo. I love it.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Jill, you and Lauren wrote this script, didn't you?
No. We came up with the story during the pandemic. We were bored like everyone else and I was drinking too much. And Lauren's like, we started watching movies again and we watched Misery. And I was like, why don't we like write a story that's just like two women and we can film it here and it'll just keep us busy. So we kind of came up with the framework of it. I was originally supposed to be in it. And I was like, you know, older woman, younger woman, blah, blah. And then this contest came around and it was like a we make your feature like low budget. We'll provide some money. We'll provide all the resources, blah. And we contacted a writer friend of ours named Sky, who's queer, amazing. I mean, has won every award under the sun, but hadn't been produced yet. And we said, hey, we're going to enter this contest. And we had started working on an outline with her. So technically, it's the story by the three of us, and Sky wrote it.
Oh, great.
I want to give proper credit. She wrote the script, but the story came from us. And then as it evolved and when we won the contest, I was like, I can't possibly produce this and be in it at the same time. And I love acting, but it is not my first love anymore. I'm so much more comfortable behind the camera now. And there's a lot more power in being a producer than being in front of the camera. So I very brilliantly asked one of my dearest friends who is also happens to be an amazing actor. I said, would you do this? And she's like, are you kidding me? Yes. And the rest is history. And she is fantastic. Erin Matthews is her name. The fact that this is her first, like, she's been on a million TV shows. Like if you look her up on IMDb, she's been on everything, but she's never had like a lead role in a film, and she absolutely should be leading films.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, awesome. She's fucking brilliant. And she's not entirely straight. She's married, and her husband's a very good friend of mine. But Aaron ain't entirely straight. So yes. I just want the audience to know that, because it is important.
How did you... Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, isn't there a story about that's how Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, they won a contest called Green Light Project, and that's how they got their first film on the map or something?
They ended up doing Matt did Project Green Light later, which actually... Oh. Bad Habits was one of the finalists for Project Greenlight down the line, but that's Bad Habits is on our new slate still. I'm still trying to make that fucking show. No, but they were kids and they wrote Good Will Hunting together.
Yeah, that's weird.
Straight, you know, or cishet white dudes get doors opened, and they were given, you know, a huge budget, and Robin Williams, and the rest is history.
Oh, I didn't know the whole story. I thought they...
And they're talented. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they didn't deserve to have it made, but like, I know a lot of talented women that don't get those opportunities. Yeah. So,
I remember Project Greenlight from when I was a kid watching it on HBO.
Right? Yeah, I remember.
Oh, wow.
And then it got problematic. It got, you know, like, I don't remember if it was, I think it was Issa Rae. I can't remember, but like a woman of color came on and they started talking about like, whether or not there should, like, you should have, you know, like, you should say that your crew is going to be diverse and you should absolutely. And he was like, he pushed back on it. He got a lot of flack for it, but he was like, well, the best person for the job should get it. And it's like,
that argument, don't they, with queer actors?
Yeah. Right?
Playing queer or straight actors playing queer roles. It's the same.
Exactly.
It's like, come up with something different. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work for every single argument.
And who's to say that a Black woman isn't the best person for the role? The point is that they don't get in the room. We don't get to get into the room. I mean, that's why this trip is huge, because we're getting into the room. We're getting into the upper echelon, the highest of high in the film industry. And, you know, I'm not stupid. I'm not thinking I'm going to walk away with some distribution deal. I don't even want one, to be honest with you. But I do want the opportunity to find potential partners that understand what I'm trying to sell, which is very different than most of the people who are selling at Cannes. I am not there to say I have a $5 million, $10 million film with A-list actors. No, I'm saying I have a community that's hungry for content, because I've fucking been doing this for 20 years and I know that. Right. So take a little of your chicken scratch, throw it my way, and I'll show you what we can do with that. And I know not many people are selling that. So we feel like we have a unique selling proposition that very few people will have there.
And would you say that that's the basis for Fair Play Films?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes, we are. Let's
talk a little bit about what that is, because I think this is incredible and, again, timely for the situation where everyone's in. So
tell us
about that.
So while we were filming Under the Influencer, obviously, you know, we had all $60,000 to work with, and that's hard. And we ended up using students for a lot of our crew. I mean, they made up probably a third of our crew, and they were like late year film students. And after we were done filming, we did interviews and we started talking to them, and we realized like what an impact we had made. And now most of these were women. A lot of them were women of color, queer kids. We realized they now have a credit, a real IMDb credit, before they even graduate from college. And that's how you change things. You actually give opportunity, you know, holding contests and doing workshops. Those are fantastic, but there's no replacement for actual experience on set and being on set from beginning to end. So I was like, this is a business model. This is a business model. So I started thinking about it. I was, you know, talking to Katie, some of the other, our DP, who's a queer woman, Rachel Hastings Adair, she's fucking brilliant. And she brought all these queer women onto her set. It was diverse. It was amazing. And she's, you know, she's all about getting women behind the camera, especially DPs. Like, it's a very, very male dominated world. So we started talking about this, and I developed a business plan that essentially sort of caps everybody's pay. So everyone from the executive producer down to craft services is basically making the same amount. And I am like the anti-auteur. I think the auteur style of filmmaking, which is basically the director is like the king and makes all the decisions. I think that's bullshit. I think that it creates a very, it's like a patriarchy. And that is not
imbalance of power. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone has something to add to a film set, and every single person on that set is just as important. Craft services is fucking vital. Like,
oh, yeah.
People yeah. are hungry, they don't do their best work. Everybody is right. so important on a set. And so we're flattening the structure, and then we're actually doing true profit sharing, where it's everyone participates in profit sharing. So that's the idea. And by doing this, we can cap the budget. I'm looking at doing every project around $500,000, which is very comfortable. Everyone will make a day rate of about $500, which is a totally doable day rate yeah. for an independent film. And then we have basically in our budget, we've sort of set the budget levels. So we're like, this is how much money that we have for production design. So we have to write to our resources. And that is how you do independent film or low budget film. And I know this because I've been doing it my whole life. You don't take a script and say, this is how much money we need. When you're working in low budget, you say, this is what we've got. Now let's make the script fit into those resources.
Oh, so you're not like traveling around the world, looking for locations, renting the right
space, you know,
car chases, explosives, things like that.
Exactly. You got it right
into the budget, right?
Exactly. So we're like, this is what you've got for production design. This is what you've got for locations. So if you don't have enough money for locations, you need to cut your locations down. You need to get creative and cut the number of characters down, because we can't pay a dozen SAG actors. And I do believe in using union actors because we are better. Right. But like, you've got to cut down on the number of actors and tell the same story with less resources. And that is a challenge. And that's why I'm like, that's where the true artists lie. People that can say, I'm going to tell this story, but now I need to remove this car chase. And how do I tell this part of the story without a car chase? Well, we show the end of the car chase, or we, you know what I'm saying? There's like ways around it. Yeah. And so that is the idea. To further explain how this is a sustainable model, is that ideally our entire slate, which is all of $3.5 million for 8 delivered projects, that's ridiculous. That's half of what a usual indie budget is. And I'm going to deliver 8 projects.
These are full length films, right?
These are either full length films or series, because we're trying to do Bad Habits, 6 right. episodes, and Kittens in a Cage season 2.
okay, yes. Great. Yes. Yes.
I roped in Jillian. She came to our screening in December, and I was like, I would kill to work with you. And she's like, I would kill to do season 2 of Kittens. And I was like, it was fucking brilliant, and there needs to be a season 2. So it's either a feature or 6 half-hour episodes.
Perfect. That's great.
Yes. So, and we have a horror anthology. We have Kittens in a Cage. We have Bad Habits. Those are our 3 series. Then we have, 2 feature films that are based on public domain, projects, which, as we saw with, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, which was crap. It was, but once Winnie the Pooh became public domain, someone made a horror movie out of it. Very smart. But yeah. I could have written a better script in an afternoon.
Oh my God.
$50,000 budget, grossed $5.5 million at the box office. And there was a sequel that's made a shit ton of money.
Wow.
So we have 2 projects. Hannigan, which is based on Annie, told from the perspective of Miss Hannigan, who I think was not a villain. She was being terrorized by those. And then the Hardy Boys. We're going to do a queer reimagining of the Hardy Boys as a
horror. Oh, I just watched the new one on Disney.
Yes. So we know just the IP alone, we know those movies will more than cover our entire budget. So even if the other projects make no money, and then our movie Under the Influencer, and then our director from Under the Influencer has a documentary that just needs finishing funds about the troubled teen industry. That is also part of the slate. So all of those projects delivered $3.5 million. And that is what I'm going to sell in France. I'm going to try. I
can totally see this being the new, like the new trend for filmmakers. Yeah. I tell JD this all the time. I'm really active on Threads. Like, I've just found this to be so less toxic, you know, of Twitter. And it feels like it's our age point. You know, it doesn't feel like there's too many youngins, doesn't feel like there's too many old codgers. It feels like it's right, you know, right down the middle.
Need to get on there.
It doesn't feel Facebooky or anything, but what I like is that there are so many queer creatives that are on there, and they try and get their algorithm to show them certain things. So every day they'll post short filmmaker, queer creative, you know, queer acting, you know, and they list it all in hopes that it'll kick their algorithm to show them more. And I think that people are actually connecting that way. And it's really interesting. So
I gotta get on there.
Yeah.
For artists, right? Is it more like for artists Threads?
No, I think it's everything. Like,
it's for people who don't want the hellscape of Twitter.
Right? But they wanna they'll show something that they knitted, they'll show something that they painted, they'll put a clip from their newest song, they'll put you know, like their resume, you know, of things that they've acted in, or they'll, you know, start talking about new indie movies that they've seen. And the conversations are really good. And the thing that I love about this, Jill, you will respond to this, is that if you've got this good thread going and people are conversing and you got one asshole that drops in a comment and you know it's going to derail everything, you can just hide it.
I'm for that.
And then go back and block that so they don't come back. But hide and block, I mean,
But we also know that niche communities don't need a distributor. We just need to find those people. And I've been saying this for years. If we provide a place, and I have a plan of how to get us everywhere without using a distributor, and then we create that relationship. Like back in the mid-2000s, when like everything was happening, right? And our community was everywhere. We've talked about this a lot. And there were a few places where everyone knew to go. That was like the beginning and the heyday of like our community really sort of coming together and like the content being consumed. And we need something like that again. I mean, we've become mainstream, right? So there's good and bad to that, is every streaming platform has a queer category. Section.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like the queer community to some degree is now just broken up everywhere. On the other hand, because of the internet, we have the ability to target our audience in advertising. And if we put ourselves on the platforms where there is traffic, we can get eyeballs. And so what I want to do is to create an independent filmmaker-owned channel. And I know people have done this in the past. The difference is not a subscription model. But also having the ability to put what I will call our queer criterion collection on a number of different websites where we can cross-pollinate.
I loved your perseverance that you have not given up in 20 plus years of doing this, and all of that knowledge from that experience is now coming to play where you can use that in all this business plan, so to speak, that you're putting together to present when you go to France. I just love when people don't give up, you know, and they have dreams and they have goals and ideas, and it's so easy to give up at certain points because it's so hard to do what you're doing. I mean, it's just really, you're going up against giants, and it's just bringing what you're bringing to the table is just amazing. Like, I just love that and what you're doing and the perseverance of you and the team that you're working with.
Thank you. I mean, but I've taken breaks. I mean, honestly, I ran a cat rescue for 3 years. I have taken breaks from this industry because it truly is, I mean, musicians, artists of any kind, like trying to do, you know, radio show, podcast, it's all the same. Anytime you are an artist, this is the hardest thing in the world, frankly, because no one wants to pay us. Mm-hmm. There is a million, you know, like, I don't like to say competition because I feel like I'm, and you also knew me, I'm not fucking new agey at all, but like, I believe in the notion of abundance. I don't think that people are my competition. I don't think other queer filmmakers are my competition. I feel like we're cohorts. Like, Dalila is going, I found out yesterday, Dalila, she has like a short, like a 1 minute short. She's going to Cannes. And I was like, you have to come to all the party. You know, like, I'm already like, let's everybody get
that's
together.
That's also great. Oh, yeah. You
know? Fantastic.
Like, that's the attitude we need to, be lifting each other up. There is a
budget.
Like, it is exhausting. And I have absolutely had to walk away from this industry and like build up my like armor again before I come back out and do this. Cause this is it's exhausting on many levels. It's exhausting to have doors slammed in your face constantly.
Yeah.
It's exhausting to constantly be asking for money and resources. It's exhausting trying to convince, you know, a traditional Hollywood that there is a different model that can be followed. I mean, I'm talking to a production company right now, and I'm not going to say who it is because it's not a thing yet, but like, I can tell you if this happened, it would be the dream of dreams, but they are from traditional Hollywood, and to get them to wrap their head around not signing with a distributor or trying to get on a Netflix or Amazon, they don't quite get it yet. I'm doing everything I can to gather filmmakers who have done it successfully before, and I've done it successfully, but like to actually make a sustainable amount. So like, say we do our first slate. I would like to like on the record say, if we make Hannigan and Tharty Boys, I will promise you, we will make this money back and then some, and then we can fund slate 2 with that money. Exactly. That's the idea. Not all of us taking our profit. We pay ourselves a livable wage so that we can do this. But then we take the profit and we say, let's make another batch and another batch so that I'm not waiting for investors to say yes to me. Right. We have to become self-sustainable. And that's the difference with Europe. Like, right, all these filmmakers that are in my cohort, they're not thinking about paying back their auntie and their cousin and their best friend. Like, Haviland and Reed Stilwell, who are themselves, they invested in our film. Like, we needed them and they stepped in at the last minute and saved our asses. But like, all of these filmmakers, their friends are investing in their film because the fucking government is investing in their film. So their sense of urgency is not what ours is. And that's where they're like, you Americans, you're fucking go get them. And I'm like, yeah, because it's my auntie's money. It's my best friend's money that I'm trying, and I want to get out of that. I don't want to be asking my fan base, you know what I'm saying? The community money. I don't want to ask my parents for money. I just want a sustainable ecosystem so that we can continue to make content I know our community needs.
I love like what JD says. I love that you don't give up, but more importantly, I love that you have taken the lessons that you've learned over all this time with you. You know, like, I think that's part of the scrappiness, you know, that comes from doing this, is that you've learned a way now to make something, and you have like this, you have this amazing film to show for it, but the lessons again along the way have brought you to Fair Play Films, you know, will bring you to be able to present that. And it's all from having to dig and claw and scratch and cry and take time off and preserve your mental health and, you know, come back. It's all lessons that you learn along the way, but you're implementing those and not just keeping them in the back of your mind for when the time is right. You're implementing them now because you see it can work, you know?
It can. And look at who, I mean, Jillian, she made kittens in a cage for $47,000. She has Joel McHale. She has Tyne Daly. She has Bridget Monahan. She has all these fucking A-list TV. They're not TV stars. They're movie stars that will show up for her. And this is what I'm trying to explain to these investors. I'm like, you are getting actors. We have Joy Sunday in our movie, who is starring now in season 2 of Wednesday. I mean, she's Bianca in Wednesday.
Right.
Like, you have no business getting actors at that level in this budget level, but we have a Rolodex of 20 years of making friends, who people who trust us, that we say, hey, will you show up, Kathy Shim? Will you show up for a day? Kathy Shim does a tiny little partner movie. Those are the relationships we have created, where I'm trying to explain to these investors, I can get names at this level. And they're not Tom Cruise. They're not, you know, Kate Blanchett, but they're like recognizable TV faces who will come and do this because they want to have fun and they want to make content with people that are fun and cool and who have good scripts. So I'm like, yes, all this experience of us making Second Shot and We Have to Stop Now and Three Way and Kittens in a Cage. I'm like, you want proofs of concept, motherfuckers? I've got five projects that I can show you the quality of what we can deliver at a tenth of the price that I'm asking for our budgets.
You got good writers. I remember watching Second Shot and thinking, I feel like I could just be watching this on network TV.
You know,
the quality of the work, the writing was so spot on. The acting was fantastic.
Regarding what JD said about women working together creatively, it absolutely does exist. And, you know, I've had it happen on multiple occasions where I believe it's the notion of scarcity that leads women to become competitive with one another. But also the fact that we are more emotional people than men. I mean, we are. It's a fact. Like, we bring our emotions into our work. We, you know, friendship and trust is like, with other women, I think, harder to navigate. Men are very straightforward. I work well with men because I am a very straightforward, plain talking human that often only by women I'm told that, like, you can be a little too, like, abrupt. And I'm like, I'm straightforward. I think I'm a kind person, but yes, I'm very direct. And I have had issues with women, and I'm not going to say that doesn't exist, because it does.
Yeah.
And I think when we're in a more equal world, we'll have less of that, but I can't say that it doesn't exist. It does. Absolutely.
Yeah. Human nature. But yeah, I you're right. Women are more emotional. Absolutely. That's a big part of it. Yes.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. And it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with the type of work that you're doing. You know, I think if you're doing something that is tense, then emotions run high. If you're doing something that's fun, you know, I mean, even at the best of times, I wanted to punch Donna in the face.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And we were having fun.
And you would get jealous, like, if someone said, oh, I love Donna, she's so funny. Like, you weren't like, well, what about me?
No. Right. No.
I actually had a girl that I worked with in a duo, who was my personal friend as well, say, someone would come up to me and say, I love the way you sang that song. And she'd go, people just don't know talent. And I'm like, what did you just say? You know, like, she'd say stuff like that. I mean, that friendship ended eventually, but I would be not believing that she just wasn't happy that someone liked something I did, because
it's unusual. I mean,
someone liked her.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I know exactly who you're talking about too.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, it's there. I'm not going to say that it's not there. I mean, It's funny. I'm in this, you know, my wife, who is young, 14 years younger than I am. And when I met her, she was in the beginning stages of her career. And it was interesting being somebody who had, I've been there. I've been where she, at every stage of her career, I'm like, I know what you're going through. Obviously harder for her as a woman of color, I will completely acknowledge. We're not, I had a much easier path as an actor, as a white person, but to see, and then like, even as we were filming, you know, we had people, I had friends be like, well, aren't you sad that you're not in this? You know? And I was like, not at all. Like, I am so proud. I'm so proud of my wife. I don't feel competition with my wife. Yeah. And on top of it, Erin is so fucking good. And she's better than I, frankly, better than I would have been in this film, that I don't feel that sense of competition. I feel proud that I'm a smart producer that knew not to be in it. You know what I mean? And, and like, I would never feel competitive with my wife. Or in any press situation. Like, I'm excited for us to be sort of in this situation, because now I'm not the actor, I'm the producer. I'm in a very different position than I've been in before. And I'm excited to let her, you know, I kind of have to sometimes push her, because she's naturally an introvert. She just, I mean, you know, Denise, you know, you've
so
met her.
Quiet. Yeah.
She's so very quiet. It's just not her nature to amplify and talk the way I do. Right. And, but I'm like now trying to be like, babe, now is your time. Like, when we go present, I'm like, you better look like an actress. Like, you get glammed up, and thank God her agency has a glam squad there. So the day of our pitch, she gets blown out, get her fucking makeup done. So she's going to walk in there looking like the star that she is. And I was like, that you need to sell that. Like, that is where you are right now. You're not only the star, but you edited the fuck out of this movie. And, you know, you technical director, which is a new sort of it's like, there's a whole story behind that, but like, she added so much to the film with the tech side that we all agreed we needed to acknowledge that in some way. Because there's so many aspects
brilliant, of this film
that she, she's, has her master's in data science that she just picked up during the pandemic. She's ridiculously smart.
Awesome. Like,
times, to be honest with you. But I can admit my wife is smarter than me, right, Denise?
Yeah. I'm the same way. I mean, I cherish that. Cause like, I don't have the wherewithal to, you know, continue on with education or something like that. But I need a smart person in my life to pick up my blatant slack.
You married up. What are you going to do? We're smart. We're smart for marrying up. Frankly, we just,
exactly. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. It used to be all about, I got someone younger who can wipe my ass. Now it's like, I got someone younger that can do our insurance paperwork, you know?
And both. Why not both?
Now you have both.
You are in the same boat. You have someone younger too.
Yeah, I do. But we do totally things.
Yeah. They bring things to the table.
How much younger are we talking?
12 years younger. Yeah.
See?
So
this is a group of parties.
We're all in the same club. We're all a decade plus.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no shame in that. You know, the funny thing, since I've been here, I went to go see like my regular hairdresser. Like, you wouldn't know by looking at me out here now. But the thing is that she was like, oh, Denise, let's put some highlights in. And I'm like, all right, but not too much. You know, like, I'm a little bit nervous. I always say, like, I would love to go gray, like just not dye my hair ever, ever, ever again. And I always had this fear that I'll be out with Gemma and somebody will be like, oh, table for you and your mother, like to Gemma, right? That's my fear. But yet Gemma's paying 200 pounds to get her hair like platinum. And I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah. You know what? Go ahead and put a few highlights in. Like,
no, I mean, believe me, it's something I think about, like, right. I'm holding up okay right now, but like in 20 years, when things start to fall, it's not like I'm not concerned. And then I'm like, well, then there's Sarah Paulson and Holland Taylor. I'm fine. That's, I mean, they've got like a 30-year age difference between right. them. And but oh, also yeah. Holland Taylor is ridiculously gorgeous. I mean, I get that relationship.
That is
also, she is our first choice for Hannigan. Wouldn't Holland Taylor?
Oh wow,
Jane Lynch or Holland Taylor be absolutely?
I love that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Also, here's a fun little like fun fact. Pat, who is plays Lauren's father in Under the Influencer, who is also, he's been in every project of mine. He did one of our vignettes for Bad Habits. I've known him for years. I've done theater with him for years. He started the Annoyance Theater in Chicago with Jane Lynch. Oh, and they did the real life Brady Bunch on Broadway together. He's been friends with her forever. So like, I have all these weird connections and I'm like, I want Jane for Hannigan or Holland. You know, getting them at this budget level is practically impossible.
Yeah.
Is mostly impossible. But I'm still going to dream and I'm still going to say it because who knows, they might have a 2-week break in between their A-list projects and be like, I want to come do a queer film for this group of people. And I do have a few people at that level who are saying, I want to be there to mentor. Like, this matters to me. It matters to get women. It matters to get queer people's stories made. I will come and show up for you and you don't have to pay me anything. And that, like, that's the idea behind this is paying it forward, getting the next generation of filmmakers actual real experience that they then can move on in their careers and make bigger movies and then thank me when they win an Oscar. That's my dream. I want to be thanked by someone else for winning their Oscar because gave them their first opportunity. Perfect. That is my dream.
I just think of all the ways this could like branch off. Like,
I have such big plans. Like I'm up at night, like, and this is the connection. And like, even where, you know, and I know we could go on for, and I don't want to keep you if you guys need to get off, but like, the whole AI aspect of things, we are wanting to present, we're very much leaning into new tech because it enables low budget films to look a lot better. There's a lot of tools that we can use that are ethical. We're not replacing actors. We're not replacing writers. It's simply like in our film, we used AI to upscale footage. So when you're shooting, obviously every day that you're on set is thousands and thousands of dollars. And when you don't have a lot of money, you don't have the time to get all the coverage you want. So we were upscaling footage from 4K to 12K so that we could push in on a shot, so that we created coverage where there was a wide shot. We now make it look like a close up. I'm sorry. Justine Bateman, how is this not ethical? Like,
that's so stupid. Right. I think she was on a tangent, man. Like, that was brutal. I caught wind of that and I was just like, Mallory, settle down, man.
And there are tools now where we can create production value and like basically drop humans into vast, you know, like make it look like Lord of the Rings. I'm sorry, whose job are we taking by creating an environment that we couldn't otherwise go and film in? Like, we're saving
the money
millions
to of pay the actor that you're not replacing.
Exactly.
Right. You know, wow.
I mean,
dang, that's not even smart. And I saw that.
Right. So we're, I mean, you are smart, but we're getting into this aspect of like how we can use new technology to help filmmakers at our budget level create films that can compete with the studios, because that's the other thing is our audiences now are used to seeing high production value and we want to deliver that. Even this is funny that I just saw this article, Kristen Stewart can't raise the money for the film. And I'm like, if an A-list actress cannot raise the money to make her film, that an actress who's been nominated for, like, what hope do we have if she can't raise money? Right. So I'm like, that's why we need to use these tools, because we can use these tools to make our projects that are $500,000 look like $5 million films.
Right.
And we're not trying to replace anybody. We're not trying to get rid of writers. We just want to use the tools to upscale footage, to create environments that we couldn't otherwise film in, to make VFX that we couldn't otherwise afford. I mean, that's what we did in our film. That's how we use those tools. That is not unethical, in my humble opinion. Now we're going to those companies and saying, hey, would you like to support queer content? Because you could get really good marketing out of the fact that you're supporting queer filmmakers by giving us access to these tools or even funding our project. Because what you shit in a weekend, I could take and make an entire slate of projects.
Exactly.
And that's the, you know, in Hollywood right now, everything is contracting. No one wants to spend money. Yeah. So I feel like we're right in that pocket of perfect opportunity.
That's wheelhouse.
To right say there. We can make this stuff.
I'm so happy for you. Like, I'm so happy that things are clicking on all the right levels. And I feel like this is just the start. I really do.
I sure hope so. I mean, I've been doing this for long enough that there's no counting chickens. This is an incredible opportunity that we had. It's a great validation, but until my check is signed and we are on the next set, means nothing. I mean, I can say that the response has been very positive. There's not a single person I've pitched this idea who didn't say, yes, this is a good idea. But I still need the money. You know, money that, you know how this, you, I don't have to explain it. It's we need the money. But that's what we're going to be doing. And obviously we're trying to partner with as many filmmakers who share this vision and who like this idea and who want to create a more sustainable ecosystem. And like I said, the other half of this whole distribution thing, which is boring and no one wants to talk about distribution, at a later date, I will talk to you about, but there is a way that we are going to integrate potentially nonprofits so that the nonprofits also make money off of our films. And it's all about putting our channel on as many websites as possible. So if we can get our channel embedded on a nonprofit, they will make a portion of those proceeds. They don't have to do anything. All they have to do is send, you know, something to their mailing list and say, hey, we have some movies on our website that we think you'll like. And we make a portion of that money that goes directly into the nonprofit.
I'm already thinking Scott Galvin. I'm already thinking of Scott Galvin.
Yeah, Scott, yes.
Let alone Donna.
Yes.
Scott is the CEO of Safe Schools Florida, which is now all over the country. It's not just
all over the world.
Yeah.
It's actually all over the world. Yeah.
I'm gonna make you up a little contact list.
I think it's great that you and your wife work together. I mean, because this is it takes up so much of your life. If you don't do this with your partner, now you're not ever seeing each other. So I mean,
and I mean, thankfully we agree pretty much all the time. I mean, there's a couple of times where we don't, but generally speaking, we're very well aligned and we all want to back off. Like there are fights that, and we'll be like, this is the hill I'm going to die on. And the other one's like, okay, then I won't. it's easy to work with one another when you kind of share the same. And no one's ever seen anything I've done that's not comedy. So I am curious. I've only done comedy as far as being a producer my whole career. And this is a thriller. There is nary a joke. This is not funny. There's like one moment that's kind of funny, but that's it. It's a thriller. So it's also kind of, I'm stepping out of my usual comfort zone to do a genre I've never worked in. Because I like to have comedy in everything I do, but like, I'm excited. I'm excited to share this. I, you know, will be taking photos on the French Riviera. I'm sure I will come back and sleep for a week. And then hopefully I will have made some new friends or maybe found a financier. A
lot of new connections, I think, from this little event. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Definitely. I'm sure. Well, enjoy it. I think the weather is going to be great. So hopefully you can get some nice pictures and send them to us. And we're going to get this up probably when it's happening, when it's all going down. Yeah.
Perfect. It's an onslaught. No, that's exactly the way. I mean, that's the best way to help us because we're trying to get as much attention. I really want this production company to be like, okay, we've got to jump on board. Cause I'm like, if you're not interested, I've got five more that I'm going to go to. So get on while the getting's good.
Right. I like that.
Exactly. That's perfect. Couldn't have said it better. Yes. My friend, yeah. Give Lauren a big hug for me. I'm sorry. I'm going to miss you guys this time around, but I'm bursting with pride for all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for having me. And JD, thank you always. Like you guys are such a good, like, contrast. I love, like, the questions are different. The energy is different. It's just, this is a good combo. You got something here.
You take that.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, lady.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
I wake up in the morning with voices in my head. I try to find a reason to get out of my bed. My mind is so distracted by what used to be a dream. The best things in life aren't always what they seem. I start a new phase, take a new direction, dance in the rain, try some reinvention. With faith I will get through the storm. I'll find my way on my own. I'm almost home. There's a freedom in the feeling. There's nothing left to lose. And my future destination will be what I will choose. I know life can be tough. I'll be a little tougher. When I see the lightning, I won't fear the thunder. I'll start a new page, take a new direction, dance in the rain, try some reinvention. With faith I will get through the storm. I'll find my way on my own. I'm almost here. Sometimes it was a hunger that kept me alive, but I've made my peace. I'll start a new page, take a new direction, dance in the rain, try some reinvention. With faith I will get through the storm. I'll find my way on my own. I'm almost home. I'm almost home.